All right, so I just want to, again, I want to tell everybody that my air conditioner wasn't going all day. So my AC's on. It's like 85 degrees in my house. My ceiling fan's on. So if my audio isn't as good as it usually is, because I have crystal clear audio 100% of the time. I want to tell y'all that that's why my audio may not be as good. But apparently, I don't know if y'all know about this, but people have been making fun of my voice on social media. Yep. Saying my voice is like slow, stupid, and dumb. Apparently, I speak too slow. But
I love your voice, Cotton.
Thank you, I appreciate it. May likes my voice as well. So
yeah, it's a southern loving voice.
That's right.
Like if I could just be held and caressed in bed by your voice in the morning and at night, I would. Love that. Just, you know, like your body stays away, just your voice.
Just my voice. Love that. Well, today I went out in the woods with my dad, and I told my dad after we were leaving, I said, I think I got bit by a spider behind my ear. And he's like, oh, really? And I said, yeah. I said, I don't know if you know this, but I constantly saw you walking into spider webs. And then I said to him, I said, it's funny how people in our region do not say spider. We say spider. You know, we S-P-Y-D-E-R.
Spider.
Why? Spider. You know?
Yeah.
But yeah, that's been my day. I was out in the woods. But
with you being from Louisiana, I'm surprised you were more like, I think I got bit by a spider, man. Oh, boy.
Oh, I think I got bit by a spider.
I think a spider crawled up my neck and bit me.
There was a crawdad crawling up the tree and bit me behind the ear.
I must say, Cyrus.
Uncle Cyrus. No, did y'all ever see the South Park episode where during the BP oil spill? And they're like, I got all this oil on my shrimp. All this on my shrimp. They're covered in oil.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, man.
I just remember the we're sorry.
Yeah,
we're sorry.
Caressing like the baby seal or whatever.
No, and he starts like rubbing his nipples.
Yeah.
Did y'all hear that?
I didn't hear anything.
There was a super loud thunderclap outside of my house.
Oh, bro, that's just the ATF. They're knocking on your door.
Yeah. Dude, I saw this video on Twitter where this lightning struck a tree and it blew up and almost sent wood into this woman's skull.
I watched this homeless man get struck by lightning.
Oh, my God.
I didn't do anything. I just watched. You know? I was just like, what can I do? He was just sitting there.
I used to live on a horse ranch, and I've seen a tornado hit a tree on the horse ranch, and I've also seen a tree be struck by lightning.
Oh man, how cool was that?
That was a lot of fun. It was scary because like it was like maybe 50 yards away from the house, but it was still interesting. I heard
a tree one time get struck by lightning from a window, and just hearing that was cool. And then looking right outside and seeing the tree like kind of flaming up and stuff, it was cool.
Yeah.
So I could only imagine what it was like to just watch it happen.
Oh yeah, it's
So what have y'all fellas been up to since all the fun we got into in Auburn?
Working on the podcast with you, Stratty.
Yeah, same here, David.
Been out. My apartment.
Write some articles for the great Cotton Report.
Yep. I did that, and just all that kind of end of summer stuff, really.
What about you, Cotton?
I have been working on the Cotton Report. I have been working on Dissecting Liberty, and I have been kind of, man, school is just ridiculous right now, because like they don't know what they're doing, but then if you don't prepare, like all the students are preparing for school like with no orientation because they don't know what's going to happen, you know? So,
yeah, I mean, like we were talking about before the podcast, I start school on the 17th. I doubt I actually start though, because not even the school I'm going to does not have a plan in place. And last they said was we're going to meet in person on the 17th, but then my governor says we're not going to have any indoor, we're not going to have any school until after Labor Day, so we'll see what happens.
And I mean, like, I'm betting that school starts and after maybe 2 weeks, like, we're sent home and everything moves online.
Yeah, because someone's going to get it.
There's going to be an uptick in cases, quote unquote.
I mean, yeah, someone will have the virus to some degree, and that will literally shut down everyone's good time.
Yep.
They're not going to give us any tuition refund for all the utilities we're not going to be using we're going to be sitting in our apartments.
And Big 12 is having college football.
Did the SEC
say anything?
SEC right now is going to have college football.
Sweet. So, you know, I could care less about school as long as I got my football.
isn't the Big 10 doing conference only?
No.
I think so. Or no?
I thought they canceled altogether.
Oh, really?
I thought so.
I remember I saw Big 10. I think I heard conference only, but they might have canceled after that. Well, I haven't seen anything.
Let me look it up real quick so we can see if Big 10 has as big a balls as the Big 12 and SEC.
Well, the SEC can't cancel because if they did, all the Southern schools would go under. Like, that's where they get their money. I mean, it's not like they're good schools, you know, and they get like a ton of grant money.
Big 10 and Pac-12 will not be playing this fall.
Wow.
Mm-hmm.
Pussies. How does it feel, Michigan boy?
It sucks, man. Now I just have to sit home and look at spiders.
You know what's fun, though? I wonder what the Heisman race is going to look like this year. Because, like, usually the Heisman race is, you know, it's always these big schools. But with, you know, the Big Ten, they have big schools, and so does the Pac-12. That's two conferences with a lot of big schools that, you know, Heisman winners or Heisman candidates usually come from. So it'd be cool if we could see, like, someone from Chattanooga win a Heisman, or someone from, like, a small school like the Appalachian State is hot. See what other people bring over Heisman. That'd be awesome.
Maybe. I don't know. I would care a lot less if LSU weren't, riding high. You know what I mean?
Is it Auburn in the SEC?
Yeah.
Okay, cool. So they'll be playing. That's good.
I
wonder
Auburn.
If they'll have fans.
I know one thing people say around LSU is about Auburn is anybody that hates Alabama, you know, like the elephants, anybody that hates Alabama that much can't be bad, you know. So a lot of people around here root for Auburn versus Nick Saban, Alabama.
Yeah, I mean, I remember when we were in Auburn for that week, you didn't really get into any arguments with anyone.
No, dude, it was a shame. I wanted to punch somebody, dude.
Well, there was that one lady that when David went and started playing guitar with that guy on the street. There was one lady who was a Roll Tide fan. But she was too nice.
Was just screaming it in the streets, though. She's just right next to Auburn campus, and she's just screaming
Roll Tide. Roll Tide. No, in that video, did I send you that video, Stratty? Of David playing guitar and bass?
I didn't get it.
Okay, I can send it to you. But I told her as I was recording David and that dude, I said, when I'm finished recording, can I turn the camera to you and can you say Roll Tide? And she went and she laughed and she went, oh yeah, I'll do that.
And she was so cool. Her husband was funny as shit.
Yeah, that was funny.
Yeah, her and the dude she was with were really nice. They were digging that.
What's funny for anyone who only listens to me on Law of Liberty, that's like the one podcast I don't cuss on. Unless, I don't know, like, David, have I cussed?
I think we've had like a hell yeah, a damn in there. But no, none of the other four letters.
Yeah.
Four letter words.
Like, so while we're talking about it, why don't y'all go ahead and talk about Law of Liberty?
Oh, it fucking sucks.
Yeah, it's the worst.
I'm just kidding. It's
Bunch of pretentious douchebags who think they know what they're talking about.
Think they know what the law is, but bunch of anarchists. No, David, how about you explain, like, you know, how it came about, and then I'll explain our roles.
Yeah, so Stratty and I met at Mises U this last July, and we were hanging out one of the nights after all the activities were done for the day, and just hanging out at the hotel. And he was telling me about the podcast he was doing, Interaction Inc., and Cotton, you and I were talking about your podcast. And so we're talking about that. And because I'm a law student, we were talking about law, and Stratty just said, hey, you know, what if we did a podcast about like law and stuff? Because, you know, there's lots of shows about libertarianism, but sometimes, you know, they don't really talk about that law focus. So I thought that was a really good idea. And we decided to do it after we got back home after that week was over. And we got 3 episodes out, and it's going well. I'm really enjoying it.
And the reason I wanted to do the show was, like he said, you know, there's plenty of libertarian podcasts out there that don't talk about law, but also we need someone like David himself. He's a law student who knows what they're talking about when it comes to law. So I thought, you know, why not have someone that can do a show like that? But then, you know, you need a co-host. You can't just do a show by yourself. No one likes those shows. So, I was just like, you know, I don't know much about law, and there's a lot I can learn about it. So how about I be your co-host, and the audience can basically learn through me. So if you listen to it, I mean, I have my own opinions on things, and I'm pretty smart. But at the same time, you know, there's a lot of things I don't understand. So you'll hear me ask a lot of questions. But me and David really like that formula, because it kind of, like the argumentation ethics episode we just recorded, I didn't know anything about that before we recorded it, even though, like, after I learned about it, it was like, okay, I've always known about this idea, really, and I've always kind of supported it. I just didn't know it. And so that was really cool, because that's just a simple way someone can learn about argumentation ethics without having to listen to the confusing Hans Hermann Hoppe talk like this.
Vis-a-vis
convoluted language,
so to speak.
Yeah.
I've sometimes when I'm listening to Hoppe, I'll put the video on 1.5 speed and listen to it, and it just sounds like normal regular talking because he talks so slow.
Maybe I need to try that.
Yeah.
But no, I mean, it's fun, because it's not only fun to make something and put it out there for people to listen to, but it's fun because it's a podcast that I'm learning a lot through myself. I mean, David already knows pretty much everything we're talking about there. But no, it's pretty cool. It's a lot more smarter than Expression Inc. is.
Well, I'll also say that I'm learning a lot too, because, you know, being able to vocalize my thoughts on things out loud, you know, I think you mentioned our last episode, which was on argumentation ethics, and kind of at the end of the episode when we were talking about lying, right?
Mm-hmm.
And like I talked about that in a way that helped me to kind of understand my thoughts on it better. And so I'm learning and figuring things out as we go through it as well. So that's another really nice thing about doing the show and just having a co-host. Like you said, it's nice to be able to have that conversation and put things in a way that another person can understand. Because sometimes when you're not doing that, you just get lost in your own head and you start saying things that make sense to you, but they don't make sense to anybody else.
Yeah.
And you can fall down some rabbit holes and not find your way out. So it's nice to have a partner to keep you tethered.
Definitely.
Yeah. I have not listened to the 3rd episode. When did that come out?
I released it last night.
Yeah. Okay. And I just put the promo out for it on my Instagram. My only thing is with the Cotton Report. We'll talk about that later. With the Law of Liberty, I really hate the guy who produces them and puts them out there. I really hate that guy. He sucks.
Yeah, dude.
I can't think of his name right now, but yeah, he's terrible. He's an asshole. He's just trying to steal our show so he can make money off it.
Yeah, dude. He's the worst. That's me, by the way.
That's him. That's Cotton, by the way.
Well, I mean, like right now,
you're just skimming off the top of our skills, man.
Oh, jeez.
We don't need you. We're gonna go solo.
He's the greedy capitalist pig. That's all he is.
But I've listened to the first and the second episode, and I gotta say, I really wish that for Dissecting Liberty, I wish our first episode was nearly as good as y'all's. Like, that was fantastic.
Yeah, I wish, same with Insurrection Inc. I mean, it was cool, some of the words of encouragement and support we got just for that first episode alone, because that first episode wasn't really even supposed to be anything much. It was just supposed to be a little introduction episode, and people loved it. So I was like, all right, cool.
Yeah, our first episode, we like give introductions. Like our first episode, I don't know how many people know this, but for the first episode of Dissecting Liberty was the first time me and Liberty Zero ever talked. So you can hear that. It's still up. I mean, you can hear the first time we ever talked.
I remember when I learned that was the first time you'll ever talked, I was like, oh, that was a bad idea.
Yeah. But like we soon found out that we're on the exact same wavelength, which is awesome. Yeah. But so y'all's first episode, y'all seem like seasoned professionals, which is awesome. I wish I listened to the argumentation ethics, because it's a shame that I was not incredibly aware of argumentation ethics until fairly recently.
Same.
And I mean, it's like something that is I should know about. Not only should I know about, but I should be well read about. Like it's in my wheelhouse directly.
Yeah.
And it might have been Mises U was the first time I heard about it, but y'all mentioned it to me through like DMs, and I looked it up, and I've read a little bit about it. I have a something I printed out. I don't know where it is. I don't know. Everything is a mess right now, but I don't know where anything is. But so I don't know what to, how to introduce the idea, because I haven't listened to y'all's episode, so I don't know what was said and what was not said about it.
Okay, but, so before we introduce the idea, though, are they going to see this video episode?
No, they're not going to watch it.
All right, so the reason y'all can't, Cod can't find it is because there's literally, I see shit on his walls. Like, I think he just, like, swoops in his hand and just throws it on the wall. So I can only imagine what the rest of the room
looks
like.
It's a bad habit, dude. It's a bad habit. I'm trying to break it, but I mean,
his room looks this. But
you called Mr. Plinkett. You got a pizza roll in the mail. You ate it, and then you just had projectile diarrhea all over the walls.
But the good thing is, because Cotton, you know, shits everywhere in his room, and he lost it. The good thing about this is, though, David could explain argumentation ethics pretty succinctly. So we can let David do that while Cotton cleans up the shit off the walls.
Absolutely. Yeah, David, go ahead and do that. I'll be right back. But go ahead and explain argumentation ethics.
So there's a few different ways that I've seen it formulated. And there's one specific way that I really, really like, because I think it's better fit for like thinking about the legal ramifications of the theory and you know, thinking of it in a legal context. So this is how I explained it in our episode, and I'll try to make it as brief as I can. Basically, the argument goes like this. We live in a world of physical scarcity of goods and resources. You know, we don't live in the Garden of Eden. We can't snap our fingers and get anything we want at any time. And so because there's scarcity in the world, there's a possibility that people will get in conflicts with each other. Right? You want to use some resource for some purpose. Another person wants to use it for a different purpose, and there's a conflict there. And so, you know, if we could just make another resource out of thin air, then it wouldn't be a problem. But because we can't, we can conflict. So therefore, because we know that conflict can happen, the only way that we can resolve these conflicts or the only way we can keep these conflicts from happening in the first, and we know that we can only solve these disputes over the use of scarce resources. We can only solve them through argumentation, because if you were to say, no, argumentation isn't the only way we can solve these problems, well, then you're arguing that argumentation is not the only way to solve these problems. So you're contradicting yourself. Hoppe calls it the axiom of argumentation, that the only way to solve disputes is through an argument. You can't argue against that. And so from there, he says, argumentation itself has implicit premises of norms of behavior that you're following when you're engaging in an argument. And he says that there are respect for respect for self-ownership and respect for property rights. So when you're arguing with somebody, you're not attacking them violently. You're respecting that they own themselves. And so you're going to try to convince them peacefully with your words. You're not going to attack them, because if you attack them, then it's not an argument anymore. And we all know that argument's the only way to peacefully solve these disputes. And also, because you're a self-owner, then because of homesteading and the fact that, you know, if you want to have a resource, appropriate it to yourself, you put up the fence or whatever. And then if another person after you comes and says, no, I want to use this resource now, well, they want to take the resource from you and then keep it for themselves, even though they haven't homesteaded it. So they're saying that the person who homesteaded it doesn't get to keep it, but I get to keep it. So there's a contradiction there too when you try to argue against the homesteading principle. So basically the main idea of the argument is that the only way we can resolve conflicts is through arguments, and arguments have ethical norms embedded within them. And therefore we have to accept these as the ethical norms for our political society and for humanity. That's the argumentation ethics in a gist. And there's definitely a lot more to it, but that's the nutshell case.
David, you're going to have to use like better, more childish type words to explain to Khan. I think that ball flew all the way over his head.
Yeah.
No, I'm just.
Yeah. Big word hurt. cotton dome. Cotton, bad words inside.
This was how Mises U was the whole week, sitting next to Carl during lectures. I would turn to him because, like, I remember, like, you know, there was some lectures that just flew right over our heads. But I remember during Herbner's, especially, like, I was just sitting there actually trying to take notes, and I look over to my right, Cotton doesn't have one note, and I just look at him, and he goes, yeah, none of this is processing in the brain, like,
yeah, dude.
And I was like, yeah, I'm with you, man.
Yeah, dude. Herb Dog is the realist, you know what I mean? He's he got Herb, the facts.
Yeah.
Herb Dog's the man.
Absolutely. So can you explain a bit more how we see how argumentation ethics applies to argumentation directly. Can you explain more to how that fits into like Hoppe's idea of libertarianism?
I can hear you. I lost Cotton.
Oh, yeah, Cotton, we did not hear anything you just said.
Can you hear me now?
Yep.
Yes.
Okay. All right, so we understand how argumentation ethics fits into arguing, but how, at least to Hoppe, how does it fit into society or politics in general, like outside of arguing?
Okay, so this is a little bit of something that we talked about in the episode. Not directly, I think, but some of the issues we kind of touch on this. So like he said, argumentation is the only way we can solve these disputes. So even if we're not arguing with each other, we're still like exercising our self-ownership. We're still acting to control scarce resources and stuff. And so because the ethical norms that you can get out of the idea that the only way we can solve these disputes is through argumentation, those apply to the self-ownership and the property rights contexts always, because that's what they're about. They're justifying these norms, and you can't argue against them. And so also, this is something we said, is that like any legal system is going to be about arguing in a court to decide who gets to own what, who has control over what. And so a court is always going to be in an argumentation setting, because that's what happens in court. You argue your case. So these norms would clearly apply there. And that's how we decide as a society who has what rights and who can own what. So the court system is all about the argumentation context. So that's why the theory would apply to law and society in a practical sense. And also, Stefan Kinsella took the theory and he turned it into his own theory called estoppel. Is like a legal term. That means that you can't contradict prior actions or statements that you've made on the record. The court won't allow you to contradict yourself in an argument. And so Kinsella basically says that if we were to have like a libertarian legal system, then you could apply argumentation ethics to that. So it's like, oh, if you stole somebody's property, then you don't get to argue that you should be able to retain that as your property, because you're both affirming and disaffirming property rights at the same time. So because you're making contradictory statements, like when you stole the thing, you violated the property rights, but then when you wanted to keep it, you were affirming your own property rights. So because of that contradiction there, the court would stop you from making that argument, and therefore you wouldn't be able to argue that you get to keep the other person's property. So that's like practically how you would apply the argumentation ethics to a legal doctrine that would actually be applied into the real world of legal issues.
Yeah. And like, mistake me or correct me if I'm wrong, but like the Tahapa, who first like made this argument, he believed that this, or the goal of this, was directly to prove self-ownership, or to make the case for self-ownership, or at least to make the argument that whoever you're arguing with believes that you own yourself. So therefore, they do not have the right to tax you or whatever. Do you understand what I'm saying?
Yeah, that's basically it. It's basically what he's saying is that because argumentation's the only way we can resolve these conflicts, then we have to follow the norms that argumentation rests on, because if we're not acting on those norms, then we're not arguing and we're not resolving disputes peacefully. But because you're arguing at all, you're showing that you prefer peace to conflict. And so he's just basically saying that this is the only way to consistently argue for ethics. Because if we're arguing about ethics, then we're arguing, and arguing has those norms, which are ethics. So it's like he's basically trying to show that you can't argue against them, because arguing against them is acting on them. So that's what he's saying. There's like that symmetry there. And that's something that libertarians always care about, is that like, I have property rights, you have property rights. And just because we act on our own property rights doesn't mean we necessarily violate other people's property rights. And so that's what he's like trying to prove, is this symmetry in the very act of trying to resolve any dispute at all.
Okay. Yeah. Now, do either of you have any theories why this isn't like an incredibly well-known thing? Like, even in libertarian circles, you know, like, I know, because like a bit of the history is like Rothbard considered this like the next big step.
Yeah, he thought it was huge.
It just wasn't, or it hasn't proved to be, which in reading about it doesn't make sense to me. Like
I kind of feel the same way because the argument just seems so simple. And to me, when I kind of heard about why some people might be against it, I was a little surprised too, because it just seems like, you know, it just seems like a really simple, succinct way to argue for it. And I think here might be the reason why. And we talked about this a little bit in our episode too, but I think it's because libertarianism for so long has kind of had a conflict between natural rights ideas. So like Rothbard was natural rights, Ayn Rand was natural rights, that Aristotle, Thomas Aquinas line of thinking and justification for libertarianism. But then there was also on the other side, the consequentialists like Mises or David Friedman today, right? And so there's always been this natural rights versus consequentialism debate. And then Hoppe comes in and he basically argues, Hoppe argues and Kinsella argue that argumentation ethics is not natural rights. He basically, because of the Humean is ought problem for justifying ethics. And so they basically say Hume was right. There is an is ought dichotomy. We can't get an ought from an is, but argumentation ethics isn't doing that. He's like, Kinsella has said, it's kind of getting an ought from an ought. And so I think that's one of the reasons why a lot of people haven't accepted it, because it's going against the two major strands of thought for the justification of libertarianism. So I think clearly the consequentialists wouldn't like it because it's all about rights and stuff, not necessarily consequences. And then the natural rights people don't really like it because the people who are putting it forth are saying it's not natural rights. Well, Stratty and I talked about this in our episode. I personally think that argumentation ethics is a brand of natural rights, because what Hoppe was saying was that it is a fact that there's scarcity. It is a fact that we can only resolve it through argumentation. Therefore, we ought to follow these norms that are part of the argumentation in itself. So I think that that might be an issue of why people haven't clung onto it, because it kind of goes against the two major strands of libertarianism that came before. But I think that's just a misunderstanding of the theory. I think that natural rights people, if they were to think about it more, they would realize that it's completely in line, first of all, with all the conclusions that they want for libertarian conclusions, but also second of all, it's just a logically foolproof justification for a natural rights ethic. So I don't really see how it's separate from natural rights. I just think it's the best made case for natural rights that I've seen thus far. That's just my personal opinion.
I agree with David. Obviously, I think argumentation ethics is also natural rights. But as for why I think it hasn't caught on, I mean, largely, I think it's because, one, I think a lot of it has to do with Hoppe. One, let's face it, Hoppe is hard to read. I think all three of us here can agree on that, that he's kind of hard to read for most people who were raised through the American public schools. So you already have that, and libertarianism is most big in America, so how are Americans supposed to catch on to this idea when they can barely read it? So there's one thing. I think it's just, one, Hoppe uses very convoluted language when he writes, but also two, even if you can understand and comprehend the idea, sadly, you know, for as much as libertarians talk about free speech and freedom of association and diversity of ideas, sadly, in libertarian circles here in America, there's so much divisiveness, especially when it comes to a figure like Hoppe, who is arguably probably the most divisive figure in libertarianism. If, you know, there's some others, but Hoppe is definitely up there. Other than that aside, like the theoretical stuff, natural rights or not, I think it's, a lot of it has to do with Hoppe and him being the person who kind of made argumentation ethics so popular. I think it's because of him alone, maybe this idea hasn't caught on or become the second biggest thing, like, or the next big thing, like Rothbard thought, which it should be. It definitely should be. So I think there should be more people to try and take the take the little helm away from Hoppe about argumentation ethics and either refine it in a way where more people can understand it, or just basically echo what he said and be a less divisive figure than he is. Because it's a great thing, and I think more libertarians should know about it, because if anything, it kind of makes our ideology that much more substantial, that much more realistic. Like David said, what are the courts? The courts are for arguing. Well, let's take the argumentation ethics to the courts, and let's just settle things there rather than use force against one another, because that's not going to ever have a resolution. It's just going to lead to more conflict down the line.
Yeah, you're totally right. I think that's a really good point. I think I kind of brought up a more intellectual point, but I think Stratty, you're right. There's also an emotional kind of aspect there. And I think that's mainly because of Hoppe's cultural conservatism, really. And I think that there's just a lot of libertarians, especially maybe younger libertarians, who kind of take some of his ideas about cultural conservatism and other things like that and kind of inject it into the argumentation ethics when that's just completely intellectually improper. I mean, the argumentation ethics argument has nothing to do with morals and subjective values and cultural values. So, you know, you have to put Hoppe's own cultural conservatism aside when you're assessing argumentation ethics on its philosophical merits, because it can accommodate different morals as long as self-ownership and property rights are respected. And so I think, yeah, it's just Hoppe himself and his personality and his conservatism in culture and stuff, I think, is a reason why a lot of people either haven't heard of it, or when they hear about it, they might dismiss it or not be interested in it or, you know, stuff like that.
Yeah, I've thought the exact same thing. And Stratty, before you mentioned that was exactly my follow-up, pretty much to the T.
No. when he comes back, we'll just tell him he has to repeat what he said.
Yeah.
That's right. But
Cotton, can you repeat what you said?
Oh, yeah. I was going to
say... You broke out.
Okay. I was going to say that what you said is exactly what I was going to say. Like, I feel the exact same thing. Like, I feel that people think, to those people that are in the know for Hoppe, in that they know who he is, when they think Hoppe, they think, like, neo-reactionary, alt-right, new-right, racism, like neo-fascist, you know, whatever. And they blanket all of his other, or anything he did with the 15-year-olds that support him now, you know, and it's a real shame, because like I read Democracy, the God That Failed, and I'm not going to say I agreed with everything in it, but there wasn't much I disagreed with, you know. And then like what you said earlier, that he's a hard person to read, he's kind of like Mises in the aspect that he is writing in a second language, you know, for a lot, especially Democracy, the God That Failed. He wrote it in English, and English is his second language, you know, so that can cause some issues. But I think he is one of the most misunderstood modern thinkers.
I completely agree. It's astonishing to me how misunderstood he can be by people.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, it's to the point where I won't even, like, you know, I won't, like, I hate to say this, but I won't even use Hoppe's name when I'm trying to talk about libertarianism to people, because I would hate for someone's first person they look up be Hoppe and see all the BS that people have said about him. He's a brilliant, brilliant mind, but God, the mob has really gone after him. Well, and they misunderstand him, like he all said.
Well, this is something that one of the guys at I met him. Well, I met him at Grove City College when I went to the Austrian Student Scholars Conference, where, you know, Jeff Herbener and Sean Rittenauer work. But then I saw him again at the Mises Institute at the Rothbard Graduate Seminar and at Mises U. And one of the things he was talking about, that when he's at George Mason, he said that his pastime is to just make Hoppe and arguments without mentioning Hoppe, and then getting anti-Hoppians to agree with him. And he said, he says he can do it all the time. And so it's like, when you make Hoppe's arguments without mentioning him, you get people who hate Hoppe to agree with you. So it's just like, it just says to me that there's some emotional things going on there to people's reactions to him.
Yeah, I would make the argument that out of everything Hoppe has written, and he has written a lot, like there are two things that people pay attention to. Like they pay attention to, I forget whether it's the first or the second chapter in Democracy, The God That Failed, where he talks about monarchism and how it's preferable to democracy. People pay attention to that, and they also pay attention to the chapter where he says that conservatism,
physical removal.
Yeah, well, he talks about, yes, you're right, but just the entire chapter where he says, like, libertarians must be culturally conservative, and it's in that chapter that he makes that argument, you know, for physical removal. But
what's funny is with that chapter especially, I feel like either a bunch of people, a bunch of Hoppians themselves miss out on that chapter, or they just completely misunderstand it. Because yes, he's making the argument that libertarianism must be conservatism. But another thing is, a lot of people conflate Hoppe with, like, your Trump types.
Yeah.
Or even a lot of people who like Hoppe associate themselves with the Trump types, and then some of them even support Trump. Well, if you read the chapter very closely, Hoppe basically cusses the conservatism that Donald Trump is embracing, which isn't conservatism at all. It has a conservative message to it, but with all these social programs and unchallenged spending, no, you're breeding more socialism. And that's the argument that Hoppe makes. So not only do people read that chapter and get mad about it, but again, they don't understand what he's saying in that chapter. So I love that chapter. That's actually one of my favorite critiques of anything ever, especially the fact that it's a critique on paleoconservatism itself. I love it.
And also, I think that I could be totally wrong on this. I need to revisit the chapter. But also, it just kind of seems to me more like a practical kind of argument, where he's just kind of saying that, like, look, if you want to maintain a libertarian social order, then you can't have people around who disagree with your morals. It's just like, if you have a church and you want it to remain a Catholic church, then you don't let Protestants in that sense. You know what I mean? So it's just kind of like, it's just like a normal thing that we all act on all the time. It's like, if you have a music group, well, then you don't bring in people who can't play music. You know what I mean? So it's just like, he's just basically saying that people have a right to association, and that's something all libertarians agree with. And because he himself believes that the right-wing libertarianism, or the culturally conservative libertarianism, whatever you want to call it, he believes that that's probably going to be practically the best way for libertarianism to actually practically flourish. So it's like, that's his opinion. And he's not saying that if you disagree with him that, you know, you're necessarily like evil or whatever. He's just saying that he doesn't want to associate with you, and that's people's choice to do that. You know what I mean? So it's just kind of like, you know, I think it's like, if libertarians really believe in private property and freedom of association, then this is something that you have to agree with, at least in principle, because they're not aggressing against people. They're just saying that we want to only associate in our political order with conservatives who we voluntarily contract with. That's their right. So, you know, people just get kind of butthurt over it and then just miss the bigger nuances and bigger picture of it, I guess. But whatever.
Yeah. And I'd be remiss if I didn't mention the article I wrote for the Cotton Report about Hoppe. I think a lot of people, either anti-Hoppians or Hoppians, make conclusions about him and his thoughts without reading very much. You know, like they learn it through social media or memes and hearsay and they hear it down the line. You know, somebody said to so-and-so that they said to somebody, you know. And
it's like, I wonder how many people posting Hoppe and Snake memes have actually read, like, Economic Science and the Austrian Method. You know what I mean? Like, his deep stuff.
Yeah. And, I mean, I think either the Hoppians, quote-unquote Hoppians, that are, like, really racist, like legitimately racist, not, you know.
Yeah.
I think they would, like how I ended my article, I think they would benefit a lot by actually reading Hoppe, you know, reading more than like a chapter or two out of Democracy, the God That Failed. To the people that hate Hoppe, you know, or they say they hate Hoppe, like the anarchists, the ANCAPs that say they hate Hoppe, like, I mean, read more. And I think you would really be surprised. Like, you have no idea, you know.
Well, like, I know when I read that chapter on physical removal, my whole mind was changed on it because it was the memes. It was the stupid memes that made me think that physical removal was about murdering leftists or people
explicit that it just means... Like, we don't associate with you. Yeah.
He's like, we need to ostracize these people. We need to, and you know, that's basically his argument. And like, I fully agree with that. Like,
yeah.
I'm not like, if a leftist moved into my neighborhood, no, I'm not going to use violence against them, but am I going to make them try and regret moving into that neighborhood as much as they can? You bet your ass I am.
Yeah. Well, I think David's example with like a church is incredibly apt because, like, you know, and I think, like, when he said, or when he alluded to it being a Catholic church, I think that's perfect because, like, if think about a Catholic church or an ANCAP community, you know, let's say the ANCAP community is like a collection of five streets of homes, you know. And like everybody on the Dissecting Liberty Discord, you know, decides to buy some land out in Idaho, and we control like five streets and we all get along and whatever. Compare that to a Catholic church. And so would we be okay with somebody moving into that five street collective land? Collective meaning, you know, there would be some sort of voluntary HOA in
line. Voluntarily contracted.
Yeah. Like in line with like what Kyle says with on Burning Boots with his Free County Project. Would we be okay with not only allowing but also like accepting, like actually explicitly accepting somebody that is a known communist into that five street like coalition or whatever, you know? And back to the church example, if you were in a Catholic church, would you be okay with somebody, a Baptist, coming in who wants to come in and actively say Catholicism is wrong, you all are going to hell, and you need to repent and become a Baptist? Like, no. The Catholic Church would not be okay with that. Just as at the Dissecting Liberty community, we would not be okay with admitting a communist that came in and said, oh, all of you owning your own land is violence, and the fact that, you know, so-and-so grows and sells weed and collects a profit, you know, that is violence. You know, no, we would not be okay with it. We would hate that person. You know, but so you wouldn't like accept them into the community, and that's the physical removal stuff that Hop was talking about. I mean, it's the exact same thing, but everybody like the real injustice is physical removal being conflated with Pinochet throwing commies out of helicopters. Like, and yeah. that's a real injustice.
And we'll take it a step further, you know, it's always the left who kind of makes fun of, or they talk down on the idea of physical removal. But I mean, let's say theoretically there are some actual peaceful leftists out there. Well, would they want someone coming into their community saying, oh, well, leftism is wrong, socialism is wrong? And you know, no, they wouldn't. And they wouldn't handle that in a peaceful social ostracization type way like physical removal actually advocates for. No, they would just straight up murder the
people. Yeah.
that's how they'd handle that.
Yeah. That is definitely true.
Yeah, don't forget the communist red flag is stained with the blood of hundreds of millions.
Yep.
So, yeah.
And the don't always, tread on the flag that. Has been yellow for since the beginning. You know, there ain't no blood on that flag other than
exactly.
Yeah, it's just
blood
urine.
Of tyrants, which is on the tree of liberty.
Yep, the ANCAP flag is just urine.
Because in the ANCAP society, we'll just be able to piss wherever we want, right?
That's right. No, I got to say, May from Cotton Report. That's what. All right, I'm not going to say anything else. Oh man. That's Law of Liberty. We got about 10 minutes left. No, Stratty, you suggested we talk a bit about the Cotton Report and how it started. You suggested that the other day.
Yeah, I mean, we're a month and 7 days into its existence, I think.
Yeah.
I think it's been a great first month. I mean, we already have, like, we have so many great minds writing for the website. I mean, all three of us here.
Yeah.
We write for the website. We got Porter, we got May, we got Jay, we have Dusty.
Wait. Don't mention Jay.
Okay.
You know, he's a mind. I don't know if he's a great mind, but you know, he technically has one, but you know. No, I'm joking. He's written some really good articles. For Cotton Report.
Yeah. It's already great so far. I mean, last night I was on the Liam McCollum show and I was interviewed by him. And he was asking me, you know, how could I explain it? And I explained it the way you did. It's a news aggregate, like Drudge Report, but it's for libertarians and anarchists. But I bragged on all of y'all. So I mentioned y'all's names and everything. And I'm so happy. Like, the Cotton Report's been really cool. And it's cool to see, like, there's so much there that's out on that website from all of the original writers, like I just named. And that probably wouldn't be there if it wasn't for this website. So thank you for that, because the website alone gives us, you know, an outlet where we can express our ideas that we think are worth expressing. So thanks for that. But also, it's only been a month and it's grown so much. Like, I remember one day at Mises, you were telling me you could see the traffic coming in off of just after publishing just one of the original articles. And that was so cool to me. And then another thing was at Mises, whenever we were sitting at the table with who were we telling about the show? Salerno?
We talked to Salerno about it. We also talked to what's his name? He did the Economics of Winning an Election.
Brantley.
We talked to him about it, we talked to Pete about it, and we talked to Per Byland about it.
But Brantley pulled up the website and just looked at you and goes, "This is you?" That was so cool to me.
Yeah, that was cool. That was cool. And also, I gotta thank, I don't know, I know somebody talked to me about getting it on, I was talking about advertising and all different podcasts, and I want to thank Matt from Status Quo, who has a really big show, and he does really good stuff. I've been listening to his History of Ireland series. He just has one out right now, but I've been listening to it and thoroughly enjoying it. But he did a, I DM'd him and was like, hey, Matt, can you give a Cotton Report a shout out? And he was like, hell yeah, dude. Awesome. And I really appreciate that. And that helped us a lot. But yeah, it's been fun. We've got some really good articles out there. And we have more articles than I expected to have. Like, I have more people sending in stuff than I expected to have at this point. Like, we're almost at the point where we can have an original article every day, which is a hell of a lot more than I expected. Like, I was thinking maybe like 5 a month, you know? But that's awesome. So
what you're saying is that's a good problem to have.
That's a great problem to have. And it has been time consuming with me, but I don't know if y'all remember, do y'all remember Dustin from Auburn?
Yeah, 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 yeah.
He's the new editor.
Yeah, yeah, he's editing some stuff. I'll put his Twitter account in the show notes. He's been helping editing a bit, which has been a tremendous help to me. But yeah,
he also has an article coming out soon.
Yeah, he does. Damn, thank you.
and it's an article that I also will be kind of,
yeah,
making one sort of like it, but I'm going to wait for Dusty to come out first because I'm going to use Dusty as my reference.
And he's going to be heading into law school himself soon, yep. Right? So yep. He might be, we might get him on Law of Liberty in the near future.
Yeah. Absolutely. And I got to mention that Law of Liberty is in partnership with Cotton Report. So, like, it's under the umbrella. And I do not know that y'all didn't see, but David just put a fist in the air. So, in solidarity. but I do
well,
not
I gotta,
know.
I just got to say thank you so much for, like, you know, doing that and, like, like I was saying before when we were talking at Mises U, like part of the reason why Stratty and I have gotten the show is because of the encouragement and the help that you kind of gave us and the advice and stuff. So I got to just say thank you. You know, you definitely, you know, just beyond partnering up on Cotton Report, you just kind of did a lot to help us get off the ground. So thanks a lot, man. I really appreciate it.
Absolutely, man. You're welcome. And I think it's awesome because there are a hell of a lot of what I've been kind of calling in my own mind, I've been calling them libertarian variety shows. Kind of like what me and Liberty Zero do here at Dissecting Liberty and like Burning Boots and stuff like that. Friends Against Government is an incredibly great example of this, where they don't really have a set thing. You know, it's just kind of whatever is going on during that week. And I think having like a set theme is incredibly helpful for a libertarian podcast because it gives you a direction to go in. And I think y'all's theme of law is awesome because nobody else is doing it to my knowledge. And so I think that it's definitely filling a hole in the libertarian podcast market.
I've seen a few people like Kinsella has his podcast, but he doesn't post frequently. I mean, he has tons of material out there on this kind of stuff. But yeah, I definitely agree with you. I mean, especially among libertarians like our age, you know, younger than Kinsella and stuff. It's like, it seems that there's definitely a vacuum in like thinking more about the law side of things. So hopefully we can, you know, fill that.
Yeah. So, in the last minute or two, why don't y'all go ahead and, give y'all's plugs?
Well, I'll go first. Like I said, I'm Stratty D at Stratty D on, Twitter. I'm mostly on Instagram at Stratty Shrug. So if you really want to interact with me, go there. You can add me on Facebook at Stratton James Davis. Check out all my articles on the Cotton Report. Please listen to the Law of Liberty podcast and the Insurrection Inc. podcast. David, go ahead.
My Twitter is at HoffFunk, HoffFunk. And you can find, like Stratty said, Law of Liberty podcast. You can find it on the Cotton Report, or you can find it on Twitter at Law of Liberty Pod. And if anybody out there likes funky music, you can look up my artist profile on Spotify, Funk Hoff. I release music out on there. So if you like funky tunes, you can check that out and let me know what you think. And yeah, that's what I got.
Awesome. And all of that will be on the show notes. And I do not know what the what that will be, but just Dissecting Liberty / the number episode this is. All right. Well, thank everybody. Thank y'all for listening. This is Liberty Zero reminding you to zero in your rifle. And this is Cotton Archist reminding you to pick cotton voluntarily. Hey everybody, Cotton here. I have been working on a project called the Cotton Report, which is part news aggregator and part media publication. If you go to cottonreport.com, you'll find a nice amalgamation of the headlines, also some original articles. I would really appreciate it if y'all check it out. It is at cottonreport.com.